So we've had this great opportunity to have a reset, get off the road and take the system apart and clean it up and get rid of the pieces that are derelict and tighten up the bits that are growing weak or getting worn. And then really feeling a bit, hopefully getting fit for continuing practice. Probably we have obviously various kinds of experiences on retreats which are illuminating and sometimes shocking. We have the experience of being with others on a retreat, which I think is always incredibly helpful if it's consciously acknowledged that we are with each other, not just a visual phenomenon arising and passing. But we are with each other in this sense of different bodies, different cultures, different ages, just bonding together into something that's has a lot of integrity in it, commitment in it, and takes us deeper. And in that we do see there are places where our minds slip and slide or go into very injurious patterns, and it's the subtle point of the misconduct of the citta, of the confused citta, which does us no end of harm and harms itself. And where does this misconduct arise from? Where does this, we have to say, it arises from karma, the karmic field, the field of potentials and activities and programs and inclinations that we arise within and we're affected by our own and by the that of others, and we pick up and we adopt patterns, processes, intentions that we don't really clearly understand what's happening, the results of them. So this process of careful attention, being able to look into some of these and say, well, you know, there are causes here that one can make an effort to terminate, to relinquish. This is the real long-standing benefits and encouragements of a retreat, to see what you can, the injurious stuff that does you harm, that you can find a way to terminate, to let go of, to put aside. And this way it help to, and then what you haven't acknowledged. Not many people are very good at acknowledgement, it seems to me. You know, there's a lot of things they feel they want to do or could do or should do, or actually acknowledging what just unskillful things they put aside. Not many people seem to know how to do that or make much of it. So if it's past, well, yeah, it's past, but it's also got a message in it. You know, both our ability to be drawn in, attached, stuck to things, and our ability to clear that and look at the space that's there when you drop something, some habit, some compulsive, some process of self-indictment and aversion to others. Guilt. And allowing in that space, if we cultivate that, then virtues and blessings will blossom by themselves, will arise by themselves, clearing the soil. Without that, we don't acknowledge what has ceased. This is the truth of cessation. What has ceased, then we don't necessarily see and enjoy the space that's there when that has ceased, and that's the space from which the blessings grow. Without that understanding, we're always trying to make things happen. And this creates a particular tension and pressure in the mind, which isn't the most conducive for growing beyond self, selfhood. See what has ceased. Enjoy the space. And one of the practicalities of this process of custodianship of the citta, custodianship of one's karma, the Buddha makes these very clear, distinct qualities of sila, which are not esoteric, not difficult to understand, and you can develop them in accordance, you know, to destroying the life of living creatures. So, you know, clearly, you know, destroying other people, but then other animals and then insects, and take it on down as far as you can go. The wider the span, the more sensitive span, the more you can manage it, and then this is always going to be a sign of the heart strengthening in integrity. And this strengthening integrity is a powerful agent. So we realize now, of course, we are more or less in systems. We live in systems that demand the destruction of life. So we find ourselves kind of sometimes quite helpless. Mm-hmm. So then, you know, you start to look at, well, if you don't consume, you don't have to kill animals, if you don't even consume their flesh or their products, then of course you're lessening, by that power of consumer power, you lessen, you're making your effort in that way. And it's to recognize with all these things, making an effort to in this way, that yeah, you can say it doesn't seem to make that much difference. But the difference it makes is I'm decided to be someone who tries, rather than someone who goes, well, what can you do? What would you like to be? Someone who at least tones up, or someone who just shrugs? So destroying life. We particularly have the power, consumer power. This is a great power. And then if we look at this broadly, we, as I said before, we recognize that every material thing comes from the earth, and we take it. Is it been given? Can the earth give? Well, the earth can drop fruit. It can certainly can give. Do we pay anything back? You know, since earth can't speak, what we take, we do have to take. Could we give something back? And take as little as possible. This is always, to my mind, this is always a good thing to tone up to. Again, one can feel it's not going to make that much difference, but it makes a difference to oneself. You know, you become someone who tunes in, sees the danger, and at least tries. You know, that's what I do, I try. I don't expect the earth is going to be changed by my actions alone, but I know I will be. And maybe somebody else who hears of this will also do the same, and maybe somebody else will. And that's you know, well, that's better than shrugging, and isn't it? So, you know, I have quite a lot of environmental conscience. So I personally do things like determined not to use bottled water, because this can be quite difficult at times. But I thought, well, I won't die if I go 24 hours without water. I'll get through. And so even in places like India and Southeast Asia, I managed to get along without using any of this stuff, plastic stuff. Just take a chance, boil some water, go without. It's doable, and you make an effort. Just try, make an effort. Because it's better to be that than just, a feeling of hopelessness, helplessness, or just not even noticing. So one looks at things one can do. And this way you tone up sexual misconduct. Just aware we have sexual bodies. That's kind of what they're one of those fundamental programs they have to regenerate and so forth. Sexual bodies. So refrain from speech that's suggestive, flirtatious, body language, gestures, even clothing is just there to keep one do what clothing should do. It's not there to be an advertisement for something. This way, you can refine it. So we're definitely not sending out signals. And if signals are sent out, we don't respond to them. We train ourselves not to respond to these. You notice there's just signal. It can be attraction, desire arising. You think, well, just how, although clearly, sexuality is so it's there, and it's part of what people live with and form relationships with, that's as it is. But we also just see, the amount of harm, caused through sexual misconduct. And it's rife. It's a pandemic of abuse, and people not really acknowledging. Well, it's because the hooks are out. It's not like they're out all over the place. Everything you see, well, not everything, but a lot of things you see are definitely got a sexuality in their presentation, in their advertising. So I've lived celibate life since I was 25 or so. But doesn't mean that one's body is celibate. not insensitive to that. You get very sensitive to it, and you begin to see, geez, there's so much of this around. And you go to a city, it's just everywhere. You can feel buttons being pushed, and you didn't really notice it before. And then it's so pleasant to be in situations where people are behaving in ways where those don't get pushed. You feel quiet, calm, tranquil, peaceful, just easy. Easy with each other. The lights aren't being lit, things aren't going on. So you say, well, I'm someone who trains so that I neither endorse that, I don't follow it, and I don't participate in anything that gives out these signals as a general public statement. Or who is following that, hungry for it. These are things to consider. And intoxication, clearly the drink and drugs thing, it's again pandemic, absolutely in one in the curious typical double standard schizoid nature of a confused society, both condemned and highly profitable. You know, liquor, absolutely fine. You know, Johnny Walker, $25 a bottle or whatever it is, absolutely great, wonderful. You know, got to have this. And find it funny, people getting drunk is funny, humorous, and have a good time. And then alcoholism is sinful and wrong and disgusting. You know, and then, of course, alcohol is fine, marijuana, terrible, dreadful, crazy stuff. You think, well, where's the line? You know, and this schizoid nature of our crazy societies based on money and damaging people for the sake of money, rotting people, corroding people for the sake of money. You know, how much resources are used for just the production of alcohol, how much planetary resource is used in that, vineyards and so on. No, have a drink now and then, it doesn't do any harm. Well, yeah, sure, like half a glass of beer doesn't do that much harm. But then if you tone up, you think, well, but zero glasses of beer does even less harm. And you want to be someone who is able to draw lines. You know, it's not going to change the world, but I want to be someone who draws those lines and makes things clear, so we can begin to see why is this all so pandemic? It's because it's a cycle. The more you corrode people's hearts, the more you intoxicate and confuse and bamboozle people's hearts, the more lost they are, the more desperate they are, the more they need a drink. And so it goes. The less qualities of value and respect and kindness occur between people, the more desperate they get, the more confused they get, the more sexual misconduct occurs. These are being able to use these precepts and look into what they're about. You form your own body, you form your own mental body, you form your citta body, you form a body of Dhamma, and something that's more precious than this physical body. This physical body, you don't have that much say over it, and its nature is to sicken and pass. The body of your mind, you do have a lot of, you do have say over it, you can have a considerable amount of say over it, and it strengthens and brightens, will be for your long lasting joy and happiness. This is the one to cultivate. You come off during retreat, you see this is the place where there's it's not properly grown yet, this is a place where it needs some support, this is a place where it's disabled, and it will come back. It's much more conducive to repair and regeneration than a physical body, which is still, physical body is still pretty resilient, but citta body, you can drag it from hell and draw it up to beauty with care and attention. So we bring our minds to bear on that. What can, in my life, my specific personal life, what can I do to keep the tone bright? To explore. Strengthen the body, cultivate the generosity of heart, and a lot of clearing of regret and inadequacy and things we things we haven't been able to change, or the guilt that can occur, the guilt and shame. Just using this clarity of the citta body then becomes something that knows, no, that's not where I'm at. Certainly things happen. Certainly just having a physical body, it clunks around, you know. It looks like this, it can frighten people, it can, you know, it can do things, but I'm not in that, I'm not doing that. You know, my citta body is clear, this is this, and I take responsibility for that. We all are, in some ways, well, you know, myself, you know, still recognizing, you know, I participate in damaging, even coming here, to fly here, and contemplate that, and, you know. So, you know, it's not as if one is ever, you can come out absolutely angelic, but you know where your citta is, and you know you try, you know you make an effort, you know you talk about it, you know you have a conscience in that way. Then you begin to clear, you know, what your intention is, what your priorities are, what your intention really is, and what's just almost like locked in, that we haven't found a way to get to clear yet. Really knowing your citta body is so helpful. It's amazing how the sense of having done something, being wrong, something wrong, can cloud the mind. I think, you know, one morning over breakfast we were comparing different kinds of guilt we had. I have male guilt, English guilt, colonial guilt. I have quite a few impressive guilts. And then one of the monks had this footnote guilt, which is a really interesting form of guilt, which is not having read the footnotes properly, having skipped over footnotes. So you can fine-tune the guilt one feels over one's children or one's parents or, you know, or me or the other yogis. I used to get desana guilt. Guilt if I didn't give a talk. Guilt if I did give a talk because it wasn't quite what everybody wanted. Guilt if it was too long. Guilt if it was too short. And so there's no way out of this except to tune into the citta body, mind, and recognize, well, whatever one does, in some way, once it moves into the world of action, you know, once it's like, you know what your intention is, and you hold that clearly. So then asking for forgiveness for these accidents, these things that may have been misinterpreted, unintentional, or you may have, you know, she didn't actually mean to do that, she didn't even do that, but I thought it looked like it, you know. I interpreted it that way, so may have caused offence unintentionally. Still to sense clearing it, and even asking to clear it. This is always a good procedure. And in the monastic life, we have this every couple of weeks, and it was very inspiring. One of you were mentioning to me the other day how you had a weekly or fortnightly get together with a few others just to talk things through, take precepts, and just mention to each other, this is where things went wrong, or argument, or, you know, slipped a bit. And it's just a sense of getting, just using other people to clarify, to make acknowledgement. That was a mistake. And because I've made it so clear in my mind in this way, which is just stating it and not anguishing over it, using other people just to state something and not to go into a tribunal over it, and people just listen in silence and, you know, okay. And then be able to right, having acknowledged that is the error, the slip of mindfulness, now I see that, that's the piece, shape that up, cut that off, and again you strengthen your chitta body. So this is, I think, very glad to hear that piece, because in monastic life it's kind of the norm. But of course anything that becomes a norm becomes just ritualized, and yet taking those occasions as practitioners when we do feel we've just to help each other clear things. If they don't clear, they just hang around in this nebulous guilt. It dampens the heart. So the Buddha always recommended, he's saying, it's great gain when a transgression is noticed. It's great gain when a transgression is noticed. We see this as development in this noble discipline, this noble training. It leads to furtherance, because the citta steps out and you see that's where the hindrance was. So clearly a major precept is the speech. So body acts, nothing acts as quick as thought, and thought, what one thinks leads to speech, what one says leads to thought. So the four kinds of injurious or harmful speech are telling falsehoods, and you're refining that to the point when one begins to acknowledge this is an exaggeration, and this one, one does this because it makes a point. It highlights a point, it strengthens a point. Thousands of people turned up. Well, there was 70. It was a fantastic, it was good, And just, why was the kind of put highlighters around things, exaggerating things? It's a dramatic effect. And sometimes it is to manipulate. Everybody was really annoyed at that. I mean, I was annoyed, and one other person. this kind of thing, or we always, or we never. These are always exaggerations, and then you start to look at that and think, because you're trying to make a point and push something a certain way. And of course, this is totally normal, as in fact, lying is totally normal. Because everybody's trying to push their way some way, because in a world where there's not openness and mutuality and trust, you make your way by pushing, and one way you push is by deceit, manipulation, exaggeration, presenting what isn't true. And so this is very absolutely common, very common. What shape do you think the mind is? Doesn't bear thinking about, because it doesn't even know what truth is anymore. You've got some classic public figures who just do not have a single clue as to what truth is. Just that which is most convenient to say for my own advantage is the only measure. Modelling this. Politics is just so what kind of mind is in there? It has no orientation to anything true. So falsehoods, slander, gossip, also very common. cursing, and just pointless waffle, pointless babble, clutters the mind, a nervous filling up the space, which is probably the least harmful. It's just a nervous reaction to fill the space up. When people, there's a certain shimmer that occurs in the somatic domain when you meet another person. There's that shimmering effect of some kind, and then one wants to make that okay. And for many people do need quite a lot of chat to get that okay. Dhamma practitioners, it's often should be just a matter of, how are you? How's it going? Fine, yeah. Right, good, yeah. How's the things? Right, now we've engaged. Yeah. So, careful speech is a blessing. It's also quite a powerful practice in its own right. Doesn't just mean speaking, it means listening. And when we speak to another, we want to, you know, what I call negotiating, like, is that? So you actually do recognize, you know, we are speaking and being listened to, that somebody's offering their attention. They're offering you their attention. So that's quite something, isn't it? And what do you want to do with that offering? Checking in, time, place. Buddha famously said, well, I do not think that everything that is true and right should necessarily said, it's just there is a time and a place. To say things which are useful, conducive, bring good states into being. Can one train in such a way that manifest honesty, mutual respect, acknowledgement? Beautiful training. So you can refine these precepts as you cultivate. You can refine them from the most fundamental level, basic level, down to really, you know, checking the programs, the habits of the mind, the habitual, the normal, the unnoticed, the familiar, and saying, "How is this? Is this really?" You know, so you're toning up. Constantly helping to shape your citta body in terms of Dhamma. Because if you don't shape it in terms of Dhamma, then it will be shaped by the world. That's the truth. If you don't shape it up consciously in terms of Dhamma, it will be shaped by old karma and by the worldly influences, which are generally have a massive amount of hindrance in them, built in. So make an effort for your welfare and happiness.
Namayana Bhagavataya Sadhu Karanda Dhammase.